Rapid changes to some long, isolated cultures in the Himalayas have something to say to the rest of the world about how we live and how we shape our future. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Coming up in a bit, we'll hear how the once-closed Kingdom of Bhutan is plugging into modern society with the help of a new radio station aimed at its young people. A portrait photographer describes the rapid changes he's witnessed in Tibet in the past 15 years and how it's threatening the lives of its indigenous cultures. And writer Pico Iyer explains his quest for the comfort of lonely places from Iceland to Australia and how stepping outside of your own culture can actually help teach you what home is really all about. Let's start today's travel with Rick Steves in a country that few outsiders ever get to visit. Tucked away in the remote Himalayas, some 700,000 people call Bhutan home. It's still a very traditional society and only converted from a kingdom to a constitutional monarchy in 2008. Bhutan is also known for inventing the concept of gross national happiness. That's a way for them to measure progress on what matters most to its people. Broadcaster Lisa Napoli got a rare chance to actually live in Bhutan when she was invited there to help them start their first private radio station just a few years ago. She's written about her experience in her book Radio Shangri-La, What I Discovered on My Accidental Journey to the Happiest Kingdom on Earth. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So describe Bhutan to us, because we have this very simplistic sort of fairy tale Himalayan utopia in mind. But what is Bhutan like?
Well, that's not far from the truth. I mean, flying in is an extraordinary thing because you're flying in and you don't see much of anything. And then you start driving and you don't see much of anything. And you're on roads that at best are perilous and in some places extremely primitive. So it's unspoiled landscapes, Asian-infused Swiss chalets with people wearing the national dress, which is very colorful, even if they're farming. It's quite an extraordinary thing. It's like being dropped into another world.
Rather than measure the prosperity of their society in conventional money terms, they measure it in gross national happiness, GNH, gross national happiness. How did that happen, and exactly what is that?
It's actually a great story. When the fourth king of Bhutan was crowned, Asia was developing around him rapidly. It was in the 70s. And a newspaper interviewer out of India, a British fellow, asked him what he saw as the important development for the country. And he said, well, I'm going to measure my country's well-being in gross national happiness, not in GDP. And what he meant is not that he didn't want the country to make any money at that point. And even still today, most of the people make their living off of the land, subsistence farming. But what he meant was that he didn't want to become like the Asian countries around him that were developing so quickly that it was at the expense of the environment, that people were becoming stressed out, that they were moving from rural places to the city in search of a better life and not finding it. He didn't want factories belching smoke out and ruining the environment. He wanted to preserve a good way of life for his people. What's happened is over the years, of course, people like us hear about the concept of GNH, and we think it's just extremely charming and captivating, and it's taken on a life of its own way further than he intended it to.
Now, there's a reality that Bhutan is modernizing, and it's going from an absolute monarchy to a constitutional monarchy, and they hired you to come in and help introduce modern media to the country. Now, I understand they didn't even have TVs until 1999, and you were hired in to come and help them start up a radio station. Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, and I have to correct you that I wasn't hired. I was brought in as a volunteer, and that's
okay.
A big difference because you're not allowed to work in the media and be paid in Bhutan unless you are a national for long and complicated reasons. So I went there as a volunteer. I went at my own expense. They put me up in an apartment, and what they wanted to do was start the first youth-oriented radio station. Actually, it was the first quasi-private radio station in Bhutan. This is in 2007, and it turns out that that was right as the king, the fourth king I mentioned before, was abdicating the throne and announcing that he wanted the country to transition to democratic rule. What happened was that his young son, who is currently the youngest monarch in the world, took over, and they transitioned to democratic rule, but the idea was that media were essential to helping a democracy implement and flourish, sort of like it was supposed to be here in the U.S., many countries around the world. And it's been a remarkable time in Bhutan since the 70s, since any sort of development. There were no roads, Rick, in Bhutan in the 70s. There was no hard currency. There was very little electricity. There were very few schools. And all of this has happened. No tourists were allowed in until the 70s. So all of this has rapidly changed. And as you mentioned, TV didn't come in until 1999. And of course, that's a radical moment, a radical shift and change in the place.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Lisa Napoli, and Lisa's written up her experience helping to bring modern radio to the mountain kingdom of Bhutan. Her book is called Radio Shangri-La, What I Discovered on My Accidental Journey to the Happiest Kingdom on Earth. Lisa, the king apparently knew that democracy was going to bring in the modern world. He had to open it up. He's got a younger generation. Apparently, they had a radio station that was there for public service announcements from the king and to play music during holidays or something like that. But you're bringing in a hip radio station to a pretty unhip populace, I would think. What was that like? What did the kids want? What was your programming like? What were your challenges?
Well, of course, I had this high-minded ideal that this radio station was going to help advance society into the democratic age. And in fact, all the people, the young people at the station, wanted to play pop music that's familiar to us. You know, people did walk in and they wanted to do shows about Buddhism, which, of course, is the state religion in Bhutan, or about cultural heritage. But mostly what they wanted was pop music that often would make the elders blush because it was quite racy. What's interesting is that, you know, you give people a radio station, they want to have fun. And one of the first things they did was have a contest sort of mimicking American Idol, which was on the television station there at the time. Now, of course, there are many ripoffs of American Idol on Bhutan TV, Bhutan radio, but that was the first time. And it was a really complicated thing for me. I felt so fortunate to be there. And yet at the same time, I felt very guilty that we were sort of inculcating this wonderful place with all of these outside forces when, in fact, really, people are people wherever you go, and they're going to want the same things, which is love and to connect and have fun, dance.
And speaking of that, you wrote a very interesting chapter in your book about the Valentine's Day contest. Can you describe that a little bit?
They called it the Symphony of Love, SOL for short, and that was their interpretation of American Idol. And it was really wonderful because it showed me, it renewed my faith as a lifelong media person in the power of media in a positive way, because everybody in Thimphu, the capital city of Bhutan, was listening to this contest every night, sort of like what you hear, you know, your grandparents or your parents, depending on your age, when they sat around watching television in the early days.
This new king must be quite a hip character compared to his predecessors, and he wants to let an American come in and help shape modern media for their younger generation. Having said that, was he looking over your shoulder, or were his people there? And if you played something racy in the and the music hour, did they say, you know, we don't really like those lyrics coming into the minds of our young people?
What's interesting and hard for us to understand is that there was then especially an inherent respect for the monarchy. And everybody feels as if they are a steward of the monarch. And, you know, even though there were transgressions, kids will be kids, they'll play Fergie, racy music, you know, maybe they'll flirt on air with the callers. But the two elders who ran the station on behalf of the king's secretariat and their advisory board were all right on it and very respectful, very mindful of where stories were placed that had the king in it. I don't know that the king was as concerned with it as the people were in terms of keeping propriety's sake. And there's something wonderful about that, too, especially since it didn't feel dictatorial in the way you might hear about in other countries. It just felt more reverent. And it's so rare that you see people reverent of authority.
You described how part of the funding actually came from the sale of the king's BMW.
Yes. When he was crown prince, the now king had been given a BMW as a gift by a foreign government, and he sold it, as the legend goes, in order to fund this radio station. He didn't need a car. He had a royal vehicle. I love that story. But, you know, it's important to point out that Bhutan isn't perfect. It was charming. It was an amazing moment in time. It still is an amazing place, as many places are in this country, but it is not without flaws. It isn't perfect. You can see the flaws readily apparent in this magical kingdom, even though there is a lot of magic there.
Bhutan, what is their annual average income is $1,500 a year or something like that. And there's well under a million people in the kingdom. And just in the last decade, it's been opening up, or the last generation been opening up to the rest of the world. I would imagine you have a lot of friends in Bhutan, thankful for how you've helped them move into the modern age of media. And only time will tell if you've helped or hurt that fragile little society as it tries to adjust to a brutal, big, globalized planet.
Well, truth be told, Rick, a lot of people in Bhutan don't like my book. They don't like the fact that somebody's depicting this transition, and that they feel like I did it unfairly. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm very fair, but I had a lot of friends in Bhutan. I hope I still do. I love the place, and it's given me a lot.
Well, it's clear that you love the people and the culture of Bhutan. Lisa Napoli, Radio Shangri-La, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rick.
We've heard how the outside world's being invited into Bhutan. Next, we get an update on the pressures that threaten to do in the indigenous cultures in Bhutan's big northern neighbor, Tibet. Photographer Phil Borges tells us what he discovered with his camera on a photo project in rural Tibet, and how rapid development and climate changes at the top of the world are like the tip of some ominous iceberg for the rest of the planet. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.